This podcast was created on Messy. Create your own show today at messy.fm.
It's Rugby Ranta Banta, episode 155.
Hi Sheddies, it's me, Eddie Stevens. The time is 6:33 p.m. That's my time, for fuck's sake. Apologise about the terrible sound quality. I'm in my mobile shed, the four-wheeled driving shed that I occasionally shedcast from. As you know, this podcast is always a shed-based podcast. I'm always in a shed of some sort. Sometimes it's my garden shed that you and most people would recognize as a shed, but sometimes I'm in my living shed, the big shed that has a bed shed and a bath shed and another living shed within the living shed. I'm starting to make less and less sense. I'm sorry about that, but all I'm trying to say is I'm in my fucking car, all right? Because I'm so desperate to get my podcast out to you every Tuesday, I'm very busy right now. I'm driving off to do a show. A comedy show, and I wanted to record this so I can at least have the intro of the pod done and ready for you, so it can be out on a Tuesday. I am now committed to my podcast coming out every Tuesday, so here we are. What was I going to tell you about? Oh, I had this thing happen to me again. I'm bulking up for the winter, okay? I'm packing on mass. It doesn't matter what the mass is. It could be muscle, it could be fat, it could be, I guess that's all it could be. I don't know what else you'd pack on, what other kind of mass you'd be packing on. You can't build bone, can you? If you can, let me know. I suppose you can if you take human growth hormone. That's another subject for another day in another podcast and another person to listen to, because you don't want to hear it. But I am trying to pack on mass, and my belly's gotten bigger than I would like. But it is fun, because I know, and you know, that come the summer, I'll burn it all off, get shredded, be a ready, shreddy Eddie for the summer. But I was annoying my girlfriend. It's not the first time I've done this. I was sticking my belly out and, like, slapping it and going, look at that. Look at that, and she was getting really annoyed. She's like, stop it, leave me alone, get off. And I'm like, nah, look at that. And then finally she left the room, which was my goal, if I'm honest with you. I wanted her to leave so I could, you know, do what I wanted to do in peace. So she left, and then I just got on with the rest of whatever I was doing, just minding my own business. She came back in. I was completely relaxed, yeah, just standing there. She walks in and she goes, oh, you're still doing it. What's the matter with you? I said, well, this is how I fucking look. Don't fat shame me, bro. She said, don't call me bro. I said, I'll call you whatever the fuck I want you to. And then we had a fist fight. None of that story was true. What else was I going to tell you while I'm driving? You know what I realized recently? Ah, fuck, did I already say this? Did I already talk about baby fever? I'm going to say it. And then I'm going to listen back to my podcast from last week's podcast. They've already said it. I'll edit this and there'll just be a little tune or something instead. Okay, ready? Okay, good. So I didn't do it last week. I had a thought. My girlfriend she's got, in her words, baby fever. She's been complaining of having baby fever. Something, she's always like, I got baby fever, I want more babies. Now listen, I've got three, I was going to say babies. I don't have any babies right now that I know of, okay? And if I did, it would be a miracle of science because I got a vasectomy fucking years ago. But I have three children. My girlfriend has two children. Neither of us need more babies, but she's of that age where her ovaries, according to her, are telling her she needs to have more babies. And that's how she describes it. She says she has baby fever because of her ovaries, right? Now, I realized that that's something that a woman can say and it sounds fine, but a man, if a man says it, it sounds incredibly creepy to say, I have baby fever. Like, just even saying, like, I have noticed, I can't even say that I like children without it coming across as incredibly creepy. I do like children. I like children, and the younger the better. Do you see how creepy this is getting? But the even worse is to say, I've got baby fever. Because if a woman says, I got baby fever because of my ovaries, everyone's like, oh, I get it, that's fine. But if a dude goes, man, I got baby fever because of my big throbbing balls, that is somehow way creepier, isn't it? And I know what you're thinking. Well, it's the voice. It's a creepy voice. Say anything like in that kind of voice is going to come across as creepy, but that's not true. I could say it in a very posh, a trustworthy voice, and it still sounds creepy. Listen. I've got baby fever. Because of my testicles. Jesus Christ. What a stupid story that was. But no, I'm not making babies. I suppose I'm trying to. I still have sex. That's something I still do. Despite my old age, I turned 43 last month. I think I talked about that last week, didn't I? 43 years old, my time. And I'm worried about getting older because I don't feel mega old, but I'm doing old person things now. Like, I'm doing jigsaw puzzles again. I was doing jigsaw puzzles during lockdown, and I've got back into them again. And I'm not talking about little fucking easy pussy puzzles for kids. I'm talking about big, difficult, 1,000-piece bastard puzzles that don't even have a picture. They're just different, like, shades of brown. And they're mismatched, and they're, like, sticky. You can't even hold them. You can't even put them down properly. They're really hard. And I love doing them, because it's so satisfying. I feel so much satisfaction and honestly pride when I finish one of these puzzles. And I'm doing this thing where when I finish a jigsaw puzzle, I will sometimes invite a friend over to come and look at it as if it's a baby, right? Back to babies again. I have the same sense of pride. I will tell them, like, come on, hey, you want to come over and see the puzzle? Yeah, come see it. And then they come over, I'm like, look at that, isn't it gorgeous? Yeah, you want to pick it up? No, no, don't pick it up, you fucking idiot. You'll break it. Be careful with the puzzle. I'm more concerned about the safety of my puzzles than I ever was a baby. And more proud. I'm more proud to have made these puzzles that I'm making than any baby I made. Which makes sense. Because it sounds like a fucked up thing to say, but in reality, these puzzles are really hard to make. But making babies is like the easiest thing I've ever done. Like, I have 3 children. I made 3 babies, right? And I didn't mean to make any of them. In fact, I actively tried not to make them, and I still made them. That's how easy it is to make a baby. That's the definition of easy. When you try not to do it and it still gets done. That's very, very, very easy. Jigsaw puzzles aren't like that. Jigsaw puzzles are hard. Okay? At no point in human history has anyone put together a jigsaw puzzle and then finished it, and then gone, oh no! I accidentally made a jigsaw puzzle! My life is over! Fuck! I'm gonna kill myself! Can we get rid of it? Just get rid of it. What do you mean it's too late? Is it illegal? Oh, it's not. You know, you can legally abort a jigsaw puzzle at any point during the process. Not just conception, at any point. You can have a late term, you have 1 piece left. You can abort that puzzle if you want to. I don't condone it. I don't think it's morally acceptable. But you can do it legally, all right? But I think it's, you know, I don't want to bring religion into it. Well, anyway, that's the end of this intro. I hope the sound quality wasn't too awful. I'm driving along the I-25 to Albuquerque. It's cool as shit. I'm rambling now. It's, what episode are you on? 126? 156, right? I'm literally checking as I drive, which is this is illegal and immoral and stupid. Wouldn't it be awful if I pretended to have a car wreck now? And, well, no, because if I did have a car crash, I certainly wouldn't. No, if I survive a car... I'll tell you what, I promise you, if I have a car crash while recording a pod, if I survive, I will release the episode complete with the crash. Anyway, it's episode 155. Let's go. right, so I think everything's good now. The time is now 12:21 p.m. on a Tuesday afternoon. My time, my afternoon, my business. And I'm much more tired than I was when I was talking to you from my mobile shed. I was much more enthusiastic at the time. It would have been nice if I could have recorded the entire podcast then, because now, today, I'm exhausted and tired and not in the mood, but I'm going to do it. I want to talk about the Premiership matches. There are only four of them, and I didn't manage to watch every second of every match for reasons that will become apparent. I didn't get high. I didn't have sex. I have to whisper because my two of my children are homesick. It's that time of year. There's always a child sick now. It's flu season, so no doubt we'll have everything locked down soon. But anyway, I watched every match, but I couldn't finish every match. The first match I watched was Bath versus Leicester, which was a fucking great game of rugby. First of all, Nandolo, I've said it before, and it's not news to you. You know it, and I know it, but it is ridiculous how good he is with the ball in hand. He's literally unstoppable. That's not a misuse of the word literally, a la Russ Milsom. Every week on Maul Over Podcast, he is literally unstoppable. He cannot be stopped one-on-one. But you know, I tweeted this the other day, and I have to tell you, you know, your tweets don't get the traction that you feel they deserve when you find yourself quoting your own tweets. But I said, Nandolo, what did I say? With the ball in hand, Nandolo with the ball. You know, I'm going to look up my tweet because I feel like I phrased it perfectly there, and it really doesn't need to be said. It should be read. Let's see. Not that it's going to be a great tweet, and I could have said it in a better way. Here we go. God, I tweet too much. Where is it? Nandolo ball in hand is an absolute joke. Nandolo without the ball is an absolute joke. You see what I did there? He's an absolute joke with the ball in hand because it's a joke how hard he is to tackle. But in defense, it's pretty laughable, some of the stuff he does. So he does have that defensive weakness. Mind you, what he does with the ball in hand more than makes up for any limitations he has in defense. He is ridiculous. I actually feel like he doesn't get the respect that he deserves. Because people like to focus more on the negatives, don't they? Speaking of being negative, Richard de Carpentier. Am I saying that right? De Carpentier? I was watching him and I suddenly remembered where I knew him from. He was, of course, a sevens player. I've seen him play a few times and it didn't click. But I'll tell you what, for an international sevens player, you would expect him to be a bit more noticeable, ball in hand. I would, you know. Because a lot of the sevens players, when they switch over, if you look at like his Bath teammate, Rory McConachy, when he first started playing, like focusing on 15s for Bath, he was like a revelation. He was incredible. And then he played for England, didn't he? Or did he? I can't even remember now. Did he get picked? Did he get picked for the squad? I can't remember if he played. Anyway, you'd think de Carpentier would be equally noticeable with the ball in hand, but I mean they use him like he is, because he was in that match, he was frequently sitting deep to receive kicks, but then when he returned them, when he ran them back, he really didn't offer that much. He's all right, but I just would have expected more. On the other hand, Jamie Shilcock, remember last week I was saying how much I rate him and I didn't know why Bath hadn't played him? Well, of course this week they did play him and he was outstanding. And actually Austin Healy, who I said last week knows what he's talking about, was hyping him up a lot too. So yes, no doubt he'll get injured soon. And at the risk of inflicting my Scheider's touch on this player, another thing I tweeted was that Ollie Lawrence is the answer. And what I meant by that, and what I elaborated on, is the midfield is a conundrum for England. It's the most tricky area. There's other areas in the team that I'm not happy with, like in the front row, like Tighthead in particular, our options aren't great, although I saw Will Stewart has been brought back into the squad, and I do rate him. But it's really the midfield where we can't quite... Nobody's 100% comfortable with the midfield. Like, there's people who like the Farrell at 12 thing. There's people that hate the Farrell at 12 thing. But no one's, like, really sure whether... There's no completely satisfactory options there, in my opinion. But with Ollie Lawrence playing at 12, which... He played at 12 for Bath in this match and looked outstanding. I'm sure I've seen him play inside center before. I don't see if he's able to do that. Just looking at his skill set, I don't see it being, for a professional rugby player who is the in-form, one of the in-form players in the Premiership this season, at least playing since he's been at Bath, certainly was the best-looking inside center this weekend. I don't see it being difficult for him to transfer that to internationals. I really don't. And I have played a lot of rugby at inside centre and outside centre. They're both fucking difficult positions to play, if I'm honest. Like, especially defensively, they're really hard. But it's not that bloody difficult to make the switch. There are very few centres that can't play inside and outside. And Ollie Lawrence, I think he is the answer. I think England can bring him in, start him at inside centre. I'd probably have Farrell at 10 with Marcus Smith on the bench, to be honest with you. And then you can have whoever you want outside him. Anyway, God, I'm tired. I did notice that Harry Potter knocked the ball on at one point. I'm changing the subject radically. He did a blatant knock on right in front of the try line, and everyone knew it was a knock on. And all the Bath players attacking, it was on the Leicester try line. Harry Potter knocks it on. And you would think, well, I would think, that players would up the intensity at that point. He's just knocked it on. He's under pressure. He's on the try line. Go after that ball and get the try. But all the Bath players eased off. They should have gone in for the kill, but they just sort of were like, oh, good, we're going to get a scrum. Which I feel like it's not the first time that's happened. Well, obviously, it's not the first time it's happened ever. I feel like last week I said something. If I didn't, I think I noticed it in a match that a lot of the time when someone knocks the ball on, everyone kind of relaxes, and that would be a perfect opportunity if you're the defending team to really fucking step up the intensity and try and win the ball back. Anyway, it was a fantastic win for Bath in the end. I'm just really happy that Bath aren't a joke anymore because I hated them for a while. Because I resented the fact that they were even in the Premiership because they were so bad. And they finally, I think there's been enough performances now to say maybe they're not, you know, they're not setting the Premiership on fire. They're probably not going to win the Premiership, right? But they've done enough to not be a joke anymore. And, you know, yes, this season has been severely disrupted and you got Worcester and Wasps. Maybe Worcester would have been bottom of the league, but now it's London Irish. London Irish are at bottom of the Premiership right now, and I don't think anyone thinks they're a bad team. And that it just goes to show that, you know, regardless of the reasons why, regardless of the quality of the Premiership right now, regardless of how much interruptions have affected it, most of the games are pretty evenly matched, and most teams can beat any other team on their day. Speaking of which, Gloucester versus Newcastle. Newcastle getting a huge win. Didn't see that coming. I know Gloucester are missing a bunch of players, but even so, you would think they'd be able to handle Newcastle. First of all, Adam Radwan. Holy fucking shit. He is lightning. I do want to. Eddie Jones is mental. He's completely mental to leave out Adam Radwan when... and he's been recalled to the England training squad, hasn't he? But you know he's not going to start, even though he was started two matches in a row, scored in both, looked good in both, did nothing wrong, and Eddie Jones drops him. It would be really nice for England to have a winger like that, but I'll get back to that later. Speaking of players dropped by England, England's forgotten man, Callum Chick. Callum Chick, though, that was a weird one. He was brought into the England squad. Did he play? I feel like he played against the Barbarians or something. Maybe not. But That was always a weird one where Callum Chick is a decent player, decent premiership number eight, but I don't think anyone predicted. I don't think even he would ever have predicted getting called into the England squad when he was. But he had a rampaging try in this match. That being said, he was one of three players that I had in my fantasy team that were yellow carded in that match. And that's when I stopped watching it. I got really, really angry. And you know what? I said three, and I ranted and complained to my rugby brethren that I had three players in the same match yellow carded, which is unheard of. I realized I thought I had the Newcastle front row because I've kind of been juggling front rows throughout the season. I think I had Newcastle at one point. So when McGuigan got yellow carded, I thought that was my third yellow card. But no, actually, it was just Callum Chick and Conan, the fly half, that were both yellow carded and cost me points. But I still won this weekend anyway, so that was amazing. And it was Northampton's front row who I have now, who did a really good job. More on that later. Moving on, Exeter versus London Irish. You know what I like about London Irish? Or you know what amazes me about London Irish? I don't know what they're doing there with their players, but they never seem to get injured. I was looking at that back line at the start of the match. You've got Paddy Jackson, who seems to just always be there, always starting at 10. Then there's Van Rensburg. He's always there. Loader and Hassel Collins, they've been playing every week that I've watched. And then Parton at fullback, I think he has had some injuries, actually. And then Arundel, but this is the thing. Arundel is the only injured player I can think of in that London Irish back line. And that's because he got injured with England. And I'm not saying, like, people do like to make massive assumptions or, decide that they know for a fact what's happening with the England squad with the injuries. Like, I'm not saying that he definitely got injured because Eddie Jones's training is too intense or anything like that, but it is interesting. It's a bit of a coincidence that we've all noticed that Eddie Jones has a lot of injuries at England training, and this is another of those cases. Anyway, Ollie Woodburn for Exeter, also in my fantasy squad, my fantasy team, getting me lots of points. And he's great. He is great. He's always been great. But I do think he is lacking just a touch of pace. There's a couple of times I noticed it. One of them was when he scored a really nice, I think it was an intercept. And it actually annoyed me. The commentator said something about how he was pulling away, about how Ollie Woodburn was pulling away from Hassel Collins. What actually happened is he intercepted the ball. Hassel Collins had to stop, turn around, and chase him, and he actually gained ground on him and caught him on the try line. I don't know what the commentator was seeing, but that he implied that, or he said that Woodburn, not only was Woodburn outpacing Hassel Collins, but that he'd had to make up ground or something. It was really weird. Maybe he mixed up the names because it's not what happened. I'll tell you another, I was going to say England reject, but that's a bit harsh. But another guy who's been in the England squad but hasn't actually played a game, and understandably so, was Tom Pearson for London Irish, who looked great after he came on. He's another player that I hadn't really paid attention to until Eddie Jones and his crazy selections picked him for the England squad. He's one of the few examples where I now see why Eddie Jones picked him. He does offer... he reminds me of a South African back row, South African flanker. He's like quite tall and rangy, but strong and solid. Exeter won that match quite comfortably. Saracens versus Northampton. I assumed that Northampton would lose to Saracens, and probably badly, but that's not the way the match went at all. I was looking at the lineups at the beginning and I was thinking this is going to be really hard for Saints because they're missing three international locks in Courtney Laws, Ribbons and Coles. And they're missing their biggest signing, Dan Bigger, their biggest superstar, because he's fucked off mid-season. And I don't mean that disrespectfully. I'm sure he had to. He had his reasons, but it's kind of annoying that he left in the middle of the season. Also, there's no Lewis Ludlam. But we're not. They weren't missing a lot of players from the back line, actually. And I find that interesting because Saints are a very much sort of backline-driven team. Like, that's their strength, is how they play this attacking rugby, and they're really exciting backs. But I think we only... I keep saying we. Sorry, I'm the world's worst Saints fan, but I am a Saints fan. I think they only have forwards in the England squad. Other than, I think... Was Alex Mitchell in the squad again? I think Alex Mitchell and, of course... shit, what's his name? The winger. Tommy something. I can't think of it. Anyway, there's probably a couple that have been in the England squad, but Ribbons and Coles were actually in the match day squad. I don't know. It's sort of interesting. But I was thinking, like, this is going to be really hard for Saints because they're missing all these players. But then I thought, wait a minute, Saracens are missing at least five of their starting players to internationals. So they're also disadvantaged. And I know nobody wants to feel sorry for Saracens, and I don't feel sorry for them, but it did even things up a little bit. I was watching this match and I had to stop. I had to go and work, and I was going to watch the rest of the match when I got back from work. I can't even remember how much time there was left in the match, but, I know that Saints were still comfortably winning when I stopped watching. And I was convinced we were going to win a great victory over Saracens, finally. But then I accidentally went on Twitter and saw somebody spoil the result for me, so I didn't bother watching the rest of it. But I'll tell you what I noticed from Saracens during that match. I noticed Ben Earl. Now, we talk a lot about how good Ben Earl is. And it wouldn't be controversial to say that he's better than a lot of the players Eddie Jones has been experimenting with in the England team, in the England back row. But here's what's going to be an unpopular opinion. No one will agree with me on this, but I stand by it. Ben Earl is better than Tom Curry. Oh, no way. I know that's it, but I genuinely think that. Like, Tom Curry, again, it's if we're looking at players with these stats. One of my children just opened my door while I'm podcasting. He's gone. Good. If you look at these players and imagine it's like top trumps, Ben Curry would have a really good overall score with, you know, good stats on everything, not necessarily mega high stats on one or two things. Whereas Ben Earl, and listen, I love Tom Curry. I think he's great. He'd always be in my England team. But Ben Earl also would have good stats across the board, but his pace and power would be on another, would be as high as it gets for a back rower. I just think that I see him doing all of the things that Tom Curry does, pretty much. His work rate is certainly just as high. It's not like he shies away from dirty work either. He's winning turnovers. And I think some people, he's almost victim to that thing where he's so fast that he stands out for that, and then people imagine that somehow that must mean that he's weak and he's like not pulling his weight in other areas or something, which just isn't true. Regardless of if you think he's better than Tom Curry or not, I bet you think he should be in the England squad. At least, how can he, performing the way he is, not be in the England squad? That's the subject for Eddie versus Eddie, which again, I'm not going to have time to do, but basically, Eddie versus Eddie is just me making the points that I've been making about Eddie Jones' selection, because I haven't seen enough from Eddie Jones to... I'm not angry with him. I just know he's shit at selecting. He hasn't done anything in the media to really piss me off, so I don't see any point in doing a whole segment about him. But you know what? You know who I do owe an apology to is, or maybe not, but someone I'm warming up to is Finn Smith. Because this time he had an outstanding game. So maybe he's definitely growing on me, and maybe I have underrated him, because this was a pretty much perfect fly half performance, at least up until I stopped watching, where he was doing all of the basics perfectly, but even had a little bit more of a cutting edge to his own attack and a little bit more flair. So he's definitely a good player, and maybe he's exactly what Saints needed. I don't know. I mean, he can't be better than Dan Bigger, can he? What was the other match? There was another match that I didn't get to watch because it was the result was spoiled for me. Let's check what that was and see if I have any idea what happened with it. Oh, God, I'm so tired. Okay. Would have been the Sunday match. No, I watched that. I watched that. 1, 2, 3. Oh, what was on Friday? I feel like I did watch that. Oh, Bath versus Leicester. I did talk about everything, didn't I? Didn't I? Yeah, I did. Okay, sorry. Yeah, that was all four matches. Now let's move on. Let's talk about England for a minute, shall we? It was a very interesting game. And I really mean that. Because going into this match, a lot of people were really downplaying Eddie Jones, England's chances. Not meaning that they expected us to lose, but a lot of people were, there's a little bit of everything in terms of predictions. There were people who were saying they could see us losing to Japan. There was people saying, oh, it's just Japan. It'll be easy. Now, I haven't followed Japan enough since the last World Cup to know whether they're operating at the same levels that they were back then. All I know is that very recently they pushed New Zealand really, really close. Now, I think any team that can push New Zealand really, really close isn't going to be a walkover. But it was closer to a walkover than I ever expected. All I will say is with the end result was a comfortable win. What was the result? Let me check. And so I do want to say, like, if you're one of the people who predicted an England loss, what is this? Oh, this is the Women's World Cup. I got confused. So we won 52-13. If you were predicting an England loss, you should be really happy, right? You should be super happy with the way that went, because that went a lot better than you expected. I personally felt a little bit underwhelmed again. Watching that match, I think like after about half an hour, I was thinking it's kind of hard to see how that Japan team ever pushed New Zealand close, because if anything, it all seemed a bit too easy. And England just seemed a bit relaxed. It had a kind of, I don't know if this was just me, it was very similar actually against Argentina. Like, I felt like there was not as much intensity by both teams than we're used to seeing. If you compare the breakdowns during that England-Japan match to, like, I just watched, like, a tiny bit of Ireland against South Africa from the week before, and those breakdowns were fucking, I mean, that whole match was much higher intensity than we've seen in the two England matches just now. And I'm really worried about it. Like, maybe I'm going crazy. Maybe I'm imagining things, but I just felt like it lacked that real top tier one test match intensity. So it's hard to know what to draw from either of the games that England have had so far. I do want to say, I thought I thought Marcus Smith, who I'm a big fan of, I thought he had a pretty bad game. Like, I don't think he played well at all. He was not really offering much in attack, and he defended well, but he was making weird decisions, and he did a couple of times. He kicked when there was really no need, and there were bad kicks. I'll probably get into that in a little bit more detail in a moment, but I'm just going to go through my notes from the match now. So first note is that there was a lovely first carry by Thokkana Singer. Now, Jack Knoll was injured. I don't know if he was injured in warm-ups, but he was pulled out and Thokkana Singer was brought in to start. And I think he should have been starting anyway, because Jack Knoll is a great player and has been, but he's not really in form. He hasn't done enough to deserve the England shirt right now. Whereas Joe Thokkana Singer, who up until this season I was saying should not be in an England shirt, he's actually looked really good this season. And he had a really nice carry right away. I was having to listen to commentary with Dowie Morris. And Dowie Morris, I said it before and I'll say it again. I said it last week. Great player back in the day. Terrible commentator. But there was a moment where he said that the Japanese players needed to put pressure on the white guys. And I assumed he was talking about the color of our shirts, but it didn't sound good. There's Japanese players, of course, they're not all Japanese, but one of them definitely is the scrum half, and he's a little tiny scrum half. And I don't know why I had this, it's something about him, his just overall vibe and his face, that makes me want to grab him, like, by one arm and one leg, and, like, spinning, launch him into the crowd, like a hammer throw, you know? Hammer toss, or whatever they call it. Freddie Stewart, easily man of the match. In fact, there was a point at which I said he was pretty much single-handedly keeping, like, winning the game for England. He had a phenomenal game. He's so good. Luke Cowan-Dickey was looking really sharp until his lineouts went off target, and then that wasn't so good. Johnny May, fair dues to him. I know he did one really good take of a high ball, and he played all right, but he also got yellow carded. And I want to know, do they test the players in England camp? Do they test their speed? Because Johnny May's point of difference has always been his speed. I think other aspects of his rugby have been underestimated or underappreciated, because I think he's really good all-round player. But really what forced him into the England team was that he had insane pace. He doesn't have that now. He doesn't. He's like, sometimes he looks quite fast, but in this game, whenever I saw him with the ball, you never really felt like he's like got scary speed like someone like Adam Radwan has. So that's kind of weird that they keep picking him. England did start letting Japan back into the game at one point, which was a bit concerning, because they basically, I think they were thinking what I was thinking, which was, this is all a bit fucking easy, and they just relaxed. But luckily they got their shit back together again. But that Japan team, I was not impressed. I was actually disappointed in them. They do some pretty passes, and they have some nice little breaks every now and again. But again, it comes back to the ruthlessness and the intensity. I think if England had been playing with real ruthless test match intensity, I think that scoreline would have been much uglier. I think it could have been a much bigger win. It should have. Let's see. Sorry, I'm just flicking through these notes. Yeah, back to Marcus Smith. I still think he's a great player, like a great player. I don't think he's... There's a lot of chat on Twitter where people talk about him being... what do they call him? I forget. Basically, they think that he's overrated. And I don't think he is overrated. I think he's as good as everyone... I think he's as good as I think he is. But I think that Owen Farrell is really good too, in a different way. And I think for England, I'd rather have him at 10. And there's definitely a place for Marcus Smith in the England squad. But I do think Farrell should be our starting 10. It's not even a case of, it doesn't work having Smith at 10 and Farrell at 12. I think it can. And I think it could be persevered with. I just think, you know, have your best fly half starting at fly half, and I think it's Owen Farrell. But I could be dissuaded on that. I could be persuaded to think that Marcus Smith is the right man. I mean, no doubt he's going to start against New Zealand. If he has a great game, I might change my mind. It's tricky. A lot of these decisions, a lot of these calls are very close. I'm just looking through my notes again. Mako Vunipola and Johnny May are both in there on reputation alone. Oh, yeah. And how is Bevan Rodd not there? I fucking love Bevan Rodd. I don't see how Mako Vunipola is getting in ahead of him. And I think there are about five or six better wing options in the Premiership than May. Maybe even more than that, actually. I mean, over Johnny May, I would have, Thokunasinghe. I'd have Jack Noel over him. But even ahead of them, I'd probably have players like Adam Radwan, Ollie Hassel-Collins, Ben Loader. There's definitely others that I'm not thinking of right now. Tommy Freeman. Couldn't remember his name earlier. Freeman I would have over him. It's really, really weird that he keeps getting picked. I thought Sinclair was decent again. Sinclair is slowly starting to play a little bit better. But as for the next match against New Zealand, and as far as changes go, what changes would I make? To be honest with you, I don't think I'd make any changes at this point. I mean, I just said I'd rather have Farrell starting at 10, and I would do that. I would have Farrell start at 10, except that who are you going to have play 12? The only person that you could really rationally consider is Manu. Yeah, it doesn't work. Like, if it was the start of the autumn campaign, I would have liked to have started with Farrell at 10 and Ollie Lawrence at 12. But he's not. Ollie Lawrence isn't in the England squad, so it can't happen. I don't see any way of changing anyone, really, other than maybe. Yeah, I'd drop Johnny May for sure. For sure. Let me see if I can see what wingers we have in the England squad, because I'd like to know what my options are. Let's see. So I'm going to the English... Look, I'm going to the English Rugby Union page, the BBC Rugby Union English Rugby section. And I'm just glad... So, of course, as per usual, the number one headline is about women's rugby. The next one is about women's rugby. And it looks like about half of the articles here about women's rugby. And then you get down to video and audio. It's the first thing there is about women's rugby. You go down. The next one's about women's rugby. Then you go down to features and analysis. And 1, 2, 3, 4. 5 of the 7 articles under features and analysis of women's rugby, and then there's one about Exeter's Dunn, who is gay. So it's like, I'm not saying there's not a place for talking about women's rugby, but I do find it was a World Cup, right? So I understand why there was a bit more coverage and a bit more interest, but honestly, I'd like it to be on a separate page, because I don't go here to read about Worcester women getting funding to kick off the new season. That is absolutely, it's not, I was going to say it's so low on my list of interest. It's not, I'm not interested. Merchant, livid at Dow head injury assessment delay. I don't know what that's about. I don't know who it is, and I don't care. And I know it's not all for me, but I can guarantee you 99.9% of rugby fans feel the same way. It's frustrating to go on this fucking rugby page and have to, like, scroll through to try and find something about this big match that's coming up on the weekend. It is a big match. This isn't football. It's not friendly. All these matches really matter. And I don't see anything here. There's not a fucking single article. This is what I'm talking about. Everybody's talking about, like, how can we get more interest in the game? And half the fucking articles on English rugby are about head injuries, and the rest are about women's and women's rugby how inclusive it is. I hate to sound like a certain podcaster who I really like, rugby podcaster who I really like, but you probably don't, because everyone seems to hate him because he says stuff like this. But it is a problem. It's like, I should be able to forget about women's rugby, forget about whether or not we should have women's rugby articles with the men's. Forget that. How about I should be able to go to the English, to the BBC's English rugby page, and I should immediately be able to find at least one article about the upcoming test match against New Zealand. We don't play New Zealand that often. It's a big deal. I found All Blacks Are There for the Taking by Eddie Jones. Well, that's a really stupid thing to fucking say. I'm going to click on that. I don't see anything about the squad. There's nothing about it. Eddie Jones says New Zealand are vulnerable as his England team prepares to face the three-time world champion. I wish he'd shut up. But I don't care about that. Let's see. Well, earlier I saw this. I saw something about the... Here we go. England recall Stewart and Radwan training squad. Let's see if I can see the complete squad. If it doesn't show me when I click on this, I'll be done. Okay, it does. So I would still have Joe Thokonosinga, but I would definitely replace Johnny May. I'd replace him with Tommy Freeman. I don't know why Tommy Freeman wasn't starting. I would start Tommy Freeman ahead of Jack Knoll, and I'd pick him Caden Murley's there too, of course. I like Caden Murley, but I'd probably pick Adam Radwan ahead of him. I kind of want to go with Tommy Freeman because... No, you know what? I put Adam Radwan in. Fuck it. Why not? Give him that. Give England that term that I absolutely despise. X Factor. Other than that, yes, I'd put Maro Itoje at lock. And I would have a back row of... Jack Willis, Tom Curry, and... I'd stick with Simmons. So Willis, Curry, Simmons, and I would have Will Stewart replacing what's the name? Joe something. Has he already been dropped? Joe Hayes, yeah. He hasn't been dropped. I would have Will Stewart ahead of Joe Hayes. Probably have him ahead of Sinclair, actually. Maybe not. And that's pretty much it. I'd probably move. Let's see. Who started at second row last week? Obviously, it was Coles, but there was somebody else. It wasn't Ribbon starting, was it? Oh, Johnny Hill. Johnny Hill actually played all right. So maybe I'd have Johnny Hill and Maro Itoje in the second row and then have Coles on the bench. That's what I'd do. I think that's it. Sorry, this is a bit crap, I think. I feel like this was the worst podcast I've done in a while, but I've barely slept. I'll come back with a bang next week. I don't think we have Premiership matches this weekend, do we? Let's have a look at the fixtures real quick, because if we don't, that's going to be fun because I can really focus on England, which is what I prefer to do anyway. Yep, no Premiership matches. Ooh, that is disappointing. But like I said, England versus New Zealand, 5:30 English time. Good. I'll be able to watch that live because that'll be what? 10:30. 11, 12, 1, 2, 3. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, I'll talk to you after I watch that. Okay. And goodbye.